Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kathy King from Canines with a Cause. So tell me a little bit about Canines with a Cause.
Canines with a Cause is an animal-assisted therapy program. We're a nonprofit organization. Our focus is to rescue dogs from local high-kill shelters and train them with the help of veterans and some local inmates from a women's prison as service and companion dogs for veterans who are suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder.
And how did this work begin?
It's a good question. My background has been in animal rescue. I spent 22 years trying to figure out ways to get healthy, adoptable dogs out of animal shelters. And in that process, realized how important the human canine bond was. You know, I would see so many instances where, you know, children with autism or learning disabilities benefited from their parents adopting a dog. Or one of my favorite stories was a widow who called and told me how her wife had changed after adopting a dog, that she was getting out in the community again and meeting people and really feeling like she had purpose. So with all those things in mind, I started doing research on different forms of animal-assisted therapy. And this was about 5-6 years ago when we really started hearing a lot about post-traumatic stress disorder, and all of our men and women coming home from combat were really having a tough time coping, and, you know, the escalating suicide rates. So it just made sense to me that you could take a dog that was being thrown away and train it properly to help these people. And that's how it came about. And the prison aspect of it, there are over 100 programs like this out there right now in the United States. You know, some of them different. Some of the dogs are raised from puppies and bred for this purpose. But we like the idea of taking shelter dogs. So that's how it evolved.
So can you tell me a little bit about the therapeutic impact on someone with post-traumatic stress?
Well, it's a sad thing. These young folks go to war with the intent of really doing something good and helping their country, and sadly a lot of them end up seeing things that they shouldn't have to see and being in situations that really change their lives. So after several tours of you know, dealing with this, they come home and the more they feel misplaced, you know, they're used to being around their service comrades, and now they're back with families they don't really know, and they don't really have that purpose of service, and a lot of them have memories that they really can't live with. Post-traumatic stress disorder is something that will take you back to a moment in time that was very traumatic for you. For a lot of these folks, it's seeing someone that they know die or something similar that creates a lot of stress. And even though you try and go on with your life, there are certain trigger things that will send you back to that place. And what we like to train our dogs to do is help them not have to go to that place. So say they're out in public and something triggers an anxiety attack. The dogs are trained to do anything from lead them out of the crowd, move people away, which is kind of a watch my back move, lick their face to try and get them to, you know, come back into the here and now. There's a lot of different things they can do. They're also hypervigilant, so we can train dogs to go in their homes before they go in and make sure there's nobody there, help them sleep knowing that they're safe and their families are safe, that the dog will wake them up if something's going on. So there's a lot of things that the dogs can do. But I feel that one of the major things that dogs give them is a non-judgmental, unconditional love. A lot of the times they just feel very guilty and very isolated for certain things they've done, whether it was, you know, shooting or setting up a bomb or doing something. And so they really feel that society is not looking at them the same once they return. And the dogs don't like that. The dogs love them regardless and really give them, you know, just, I think, a non-judgmental love.
So in your time with this work, is there any one success that stood out for you?
There's a lot, and they're all a little bit different. You know, you meet these people in the beginning, and they want so badly for something to happen that will put them back in a place that they were before the PTSD occurred. But I have had several of them tell me that they would have committed suicide without their dog. One gentleman, and he came in, he would just look like such a meek and kind and, you know, very soft-spoken young man. And we found a lab for him, and the lab was a little young and a little wild, and I was worried that it wouldn't work out, because sometimes a dog like that can actually add to the stress when you have a dog that's on the hectic side. But he came to class for a bit, and then he said the dog was fine and they were going to move on. And I didn't hear much from him until about a year later, when he made a post on one of our websites saying that the dog basically saved him, that he felt like if he killed himself, who would take care of this rambunctious dog? And it was kind of his purpose to, you know, to work with Romeo and really train him and make him a good dog. So it's the stories like that that really truly make it all worthwhile. You know, just the folks that say that they really couldn't go out in public and cope without the dog. So, and then the fact of knowing that a lot of these dogs that have been euthanized in the shelters, that they really needed one another. And it really goes with the women in the prison too. You know, most of these women will never get out of prison. They've done some pretty bad things to be there, but, you know, it all comes down to the circumstances. After 16 years of doing nothing but thinking about everything bad you've done in your life, the opportunity to train and have a dog that you know will move on and really help somebody, you know, gives these women a purpose. So it's kind of a threefold win for the dogs, the inmates, the trains, and the veteran that receives the dog.
So if you could send any one message about the need for therapeutic animal contact, what would you say?
I think it's a great need. I think it's amazing what dogs can do. We are looking at a new program that launched this year called Pals with Paws. And what we will be doing is training dogs for kids with terminal illnesses, you know, young kids who really have no social life because their time is spent going in and out of hospitals. And the dogs for training are just going to be their buddies, you know, their friends and their companions. There's so many uses that we can, you know, have for these dogs that we're killing in shelters. I just think it's amazing. You know, autism, all sorts of different things. So I think the more that we can look into it, there are even dogs that can sniff cancer. I think that we really need to spend time looking into these resources of something that's already there, which are these dogs in shelters. So I can't speak enough about it.
So what are the next immediate steps for Canines with a Cause?
Well, prison expansion. Due to the success of this program, the Utah Department of Corrections is looking at expanding the program in prison for training. And we are looking at programs like the Pals with Paws for uses for these dogs, for children and, you know, other placement and home type situations that we can put the dogs in once they're trained. So we're just looking at expanding. The need is there. Right now, we're backlogged and trying to find enough dogs for veterans. We probably have a waiting list of 20 or more. So our challenge right now is really just keeping up with demand and making sure that the dogs that we place are getting, you know, proper training with their handler and everybody's doing well and progressing like they should. So, and we're also thinking about expanding to other areas. There's a group in Costa Rica that have approached us that really wants to do a program like this. There's a group in Texas. So I think that we can really start reaching out now that we have a successful template on how this all works and helping, you know, folks in other areas get a program like get up and going.
So in terms of placement for the animals, do you work in partnership with any other organization?
We do. We work very closely with not only local shelters, We train our staff on what we're looking for in dogs, so when they do get them, they can contact us right away. We work with other rescue groups. Same thing, if they get a dog, they feel safe for our program, they contact us. We work directly with the VA and vet centers. All of the veterans in our program are referred through therapists, so we know that they are capable of taking care of a dog and would benefit from a dog. So we are always open to work with other groups that, you know, have a mission similar to ours that, that can benefit from what we're doing.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's quite a remarkable gift to both the animal and the person with the disability, in so much as they go over there as one person. However, the disability, such as post-traumatic stress, can change a lot of things for them. But coming back, finding a therapeutic outlet, whether it be the companionship of an animal, whether it be creating an art project, what have you, something to keep you grounded, to keep you focused on the good things in life, to recognize there's still meaning, there's still hope, regardless anything else in the world. That's what keeps you strong. It's what keeps you going. The same is true for any person with a disability. Regardless of the circumstances, where they're coming from, the need for hope and for companionship, for someone to be there, just that unconditional love and support. It's one of life's greatest gifts, folks. And it's something we all need. Recognizing that there are people who care and can and will support you in your time of need. Not just people, members of the animal kingdom as well, of course. But recognizing this is recognizing you're not alone. And the world is still largely a beautiful, enriching place. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Statistics say that 1 in 4 people will be the victims of bullying, while others say that everyone has been bullied at some point in their lives. Statistics aside, if you're being bullied, you're not alone. The anti-bullying website, bullyingcanada.ca, knows just what you're going through and can help you out. They can lift the weight off your shoulders and give you some useful tips on how to stop the bullying. What you're going through isn't a normal part of growing up, and it isn't right. Something can be done to make it stop. If you need to talk, bullyingcanada.ca will be there.
Welcome back to HandyLink. Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Kathy King from Canines with a Cause. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Deb Lee Gould from the FOD Family Support Group. So tell me a little bit about the FOD Support Group.
Okay. We originally started back in 1991 as a group for MCAD, which is the most common fatty oxidation disorder. And we had been thrust into the metabolic world in 1985 when our 21-month-old daughter had died suddenly. We didn't know why. They originally called it Rye syndrome, and my husband and I said it wasn't Rye syndrome. That's associated with aspirin use and having the chicken pox and things like that, and she hadn't had either. And when I was pregnant with our second child, we had read about MCAD, and when he was born, we insisted that he be tested for that, and he did test positive, and it was just when MCAD was pretty much discovered in the mid-80s. And fortunately, they had saved some liver tissue from our daughter's autopsy, and a year after her death, we got the diagnosis that she, too, also had MCAD. And, of course, back then, we didn't know a whole lot about it, and we thought we were the only ones out there, and we felt pretty much alone. So a few years later, Dr. Charles Rowe, who was one of the developers of the newborn screen test that included some of the fatty oxidation disorders asked us about, you know, possibly starting a group so others wouldn't feel alone. And so we sent out letters to the families that Duke University, which is where he was at the time, he helped us send letters out to other families that they had diagnosed, and we started with 10 families. And then over the years, we started hearing from other families of the other fatty oxidation disorders, some of the long chain disorders like LCHAD, VLCAD, CPT2, and they wanted to know if they could join our group. So we expanded in 1996 around. So now we include all the fatty oxidation disorders, and we're pretty much an online presence because we are spread out all over the world. We probably have about 4,000 to 5,000 families, you know, since our start in 1991. And that's Australia, England, India, Korea, Finland, just all over the world, which is the nice thing about the internet. So we're able to spread awareness that way through our Facebook group and the Google group. And we also put on a conference every 2 years for families in various cities around the U.S. So that's pretty much how we got started, kind of like a grassroots family support group that a lot of rare disease groups start from.
So in terms of the work that does go on, does it include things like sharing information via the online presence?
Mm-hmm. Right. We've got a very extensive website that we originally started with just a, you know, back when the internet pretty much started, a text site. And over the years, some of one of our families, she does web design as a career, and she offered to volunteer to create our site. And so we've had several revisions, and we've just accumulated a lot of good medical information as well as family stories, practical information, research and clinical trials that are being offered. So that's our main presence. And then, like I said, we do have Facebook presence. We have a closed group that's only open to FOD families, their family members, as well as professionals that are also interested in learning about these rare disorders.
So, in your time working with the support group, is there any success moment that stood out for you?
Oh gosh, there's quite a few, you know, especially with families that have been searching for years for a diagnosis, and they happen to come upon our site and read about how these disorders can present. And it clicks for them that this is a possibility. So they might call me or email me, and I would direct them to one of our diagnostic labs, either in this country or in another country. And they would go through the process of doing the testing, and then sure enough, it turns up to be a fatty oxidation disorder, so that they could finally, either for themselves, and we do have adults with these disorders, that they can finally get treatment for themselves or their child. And that's one of the biggest types of, I guess if you call it success. It's wonderful that the information is out there and that families are able to utilize it and then be able to follow through after having been through doctor to doctor to doctor and not getting the correct testing done, and being told it's all in your head or it's growing pains or things like that. And then when they finally get a diagnosis, they can get on the right track, and they can, or their child or several children in their family can finally, live a more fulfilling life.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the support group?
Well, we originally started with sending out printed newsletters, and we would send those to families, and then we asked families to share those with their clinics. We used to send them out also to professionals, but over the years, since we've grown, we just don't have the funding to be able to mail things out, and we would do that in the U.S., Canada, as well as overseas. And it just it was just too expensive. So we really just have the online presence right now. And we depend on our families in sharing information with their family members, their physicians, and spreading the word that way. And on their Facebook pages, things like that. And then when we do have national conferences, we try to get that information out also on our website and through some of our doctors that we have more consistent contact with. They will send out information as well. But that's an ongoing challenge to try to get the information out there. And we're pretty searchable as far as being online. If you just plug in even metabolic disorders or fatty acid disorders, you should find us.
So what are the next immediate steps for the support group?
Pardon me?
So what are the next steps for the support group?
Well, we're always trying to raise funding. And the biggest need is training new physicians and other medical professionals like dietitians and genetic counselors and things like that, because we do not have a large amount of doctors that really know these disorders. So we're raising funds for clinical training. We're also raising funds for future FOD research. And we haven't yet been able to give a grant because we're still in the process. That's slow going, raising those funds. Because a lot of families, they spend so much of their own money just on their own medical needs, and it's just a difficult challenge, as many family support groups know, that it takes a long time to raise the funds. So that's what we're going to continue to do, is to create the awareness and let people know that we are raising funds. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so it's all tax deductible, at least in our country. I'm not sure how you do it in Canada. But it's slow going, and that's one of our biggest challenges, because we are in need of more doctors. For not only there's quite a few metabolic pediatric doctors, but we've got adults with these disorders, and of course our kids grow into adults, and many are having a difficult time trying to find a physician, a specialist that will see them. So they're having to work through their primary doctor, who is not familiar with these disorders, especially if there was an emergency situation. So we do have one of our former clinical physicians, Dr. Mark Corson out of Boston, that he is just starting a foundation or a center for education. And his purpose is to help educate more metabolic doctors. And this is via Skype and other educational seminars and things like that, for not only other metabolic specialists, but also primary physicians and other medical professionals, so that they can learn about these metabolic disorders. So that's an exciting new thing in our field. And hopefully they'll get that they have it running already, but hopefully they'll be able to educate more as the years go by.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, great.
Grassroots, folks. It's where it all starts. One family recognizing that there is a need out there, but also recognizing that there's hope out there. Taking the time, taking the effort to spread the word about a condition. To say, this is what we found to be the case. If anyone out there struggling with the same thing, can you help us? Can you provide more information? Look beyond the surface. Ask yourself, is a condition truly hopeless? And I guarantee, most cases, you'll come up with an answer of no. People throughout history have been defying the odds. They've been surviving things. They've been told there was no hope for, no chance of recovery. But if there's even one case in which a person overcomes a condition that was said to be hopeless or impossible, that sets a precedent, sets the idea that if one person can beat it, so can another. And the more cases of that that come together, sharing of wisdom, the sharing of information, comes greater and greater hope, and ultimately greater and greater potential for these individuals to live rich, full lives. Maybe some modifications will be made, but that's everything. Fact is, life is not about stagnation. It's not about saying, we've invented this or created that, and it's good enough. It's the best we can ever make it. Every day, medical professionals wake up and say to themselves, who can I help today? What can I do to take the next step in my research, the next step in providing treatment? Same is true of those who work in policies for people with disabilities. They get up and they say to themselves, how can I improve things? How can I take the existing model and make it better? Also, for those who create adaptive technologies. It's not to say all of them do this, but it's been my impression and my experience that those who truly have a heart for their work get up, they do this. Because to them, it's what drives them, it's what keeps them going. The idea that they can create something to be better and better, to keep working on the issues of today, to come up with the solutions of tomorrow. And yes, that can be an amazing thing. To come up with the treatment idea or an adaptive technology, and then to see it actually applied, to see it actually go to work, to improve the quality of someone's life. It's not about awards or fame or recognition. It's about giving opportunities and hope. It is about giving the best that you can. Fact is, the community is made stronger by the disabled population, but they are also made stronger by those who stand beside them, and those who really do have the passion and the heart to raise awareness, to raise quality of life, to say, I'm not just going to accept the first answer I'm given. I'm going to be that someone who takes a chance and takes a step going forward. And those are the ones we're building for the future. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.